Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. It's good to have you along with us this morning. I'm Ann Baldwin, and I'm really excited to have in studio today Dr. Carrie Sasu. She is the director of the Center of Excellence for Teaching and Learning at Connecticut State University. We're going to talk about that. She's a professor in counseling and school psychology. And Carrie, welcome to the program. We've got so much to talk about, including an unbelievable program that you're part of that surrounds autism, if you will. So thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, and it's great to be here.
Yeah, it's. I know it's an early morning, but we've got a lot to talk about. So first of all, talk a little bit about, you were also recently awarded last year the 2022 Presidential Citation. Talk a little bit about that, because that's for your work in facilitating interactions between folks with autism and on the autism spectrum disorder, and also folks in the community. So first of all, hats off to you and congratulations for that.
Thank you so much. Yes, it was a great honor to receive the Presidential Citation from the President of the American Psychological Association in December of 2022. A great honor for and recognition for the work that is not mine alone. It takes a group effort, but I'm glad to have all of us be recognized, and I was just sort of the person to receive that.
Well, but I'm sure a lot of hard work went into that. So why is it that autism is so close to your heart?
Oh, yeah, thank you. So I started out, actually, I'm an educational psychologist. I started out working with neurodiverse population prior to even finding my way to the university. I worked in schools and in a private practice of neuropsychologists. And then I had my own child who was diagnosed with autism at just prior to his fourth birthday. So I have three children. My son is now 15, has autism, and will soon be, hopefully, a driver, which is something we will be talking about today as well. So it's a community that I live within because I am connected personally, but also started out working with this group of individuals even prior to having my own personal connection.
Wow, that's amazing. And isn't it interesting? You're already in the field and then you experience real life, you know, one of your sons with autism. Absolutely. Is he high functioning?
He is. So he is a very capable young man. And I would just like to say that there are so many individuals within the autism community who are so highly capable. You know, often I think we highlight we work from sort of a deficit model and looking at what people can't do, but there are so many individuals with such great skills and abilities, and just it's really about finding the ways to employ those great skills that folks have and carving out space.
So talk about what happened while you were at Southern. You had this idea, right? Mm-hmm. And then you put it out there, and all these people kind of surrounded you and supported you. And what we're going to be talking about is the Blue Envelope Program. So how did that start?
Yeah, so the Blue Envelope Program started, I had absolutely nothing to do with that. I will say that that is our Department of Motor Vehicles and the Connecticut Chiefs of Police Association. It was a collaborative effort between them. There were some folks, one of whom is associated with our Center of Excellence for Autism Spectrum Disorders at Southern, who worked on creating the Blue Envelope for the state of Connecticut. The Blue Envelope is a program, it's also a physical blue envelope, that autistic drivers can pick up from their local police departments or from the Department of Motor Vehicles. And what the idea is that they can house their registration inside this blue envelope, keep it in their glove compartment, and if they were to be stopped for sort of a routine traffic stop or for any other reason, they can use that blue envelope, and it serves as a cue to the law enforcement professional that this individual has autism, and so they may engage in a different way than what might be expected. It also has guidelines on it for the individual with autism to sort of guide their behavior so that they know what they should do when they are stopped by a police officer. So going from that, that was released in January of 2020, so just before the world went sideways.
Right.
And it really didn't get a whole lot of traction or momentum prior to that. So we were talking about it. I'm still affiliated with our Center of Excellence on Autism Spectrum Disorders at Southern. And we were talking about it as a team and the importance for our individuals within the autism community to have opportunities to practice employing certain tools and really to to try and quell any anxiety that they may have should they be stopped by a police officer.
Well, you think about anybody being pulled over. I know it's happened to me a couple of times.
And you're not alone.
No. And you know, just the anxiety that goes with that. You know, Absolutely. What did I do, and the panic and all of that. It's intimidating for anybody to have to deal with a traffic stop. So what are the cues and the clues and the guidance that you give folks with autism on that envelope so they know what to do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to acknowledge, too, that I, too, have been pulled. I want to normalize that. So we've all been pulled over, but we still get anxious when the lights come on, when we hear a siren,
yes.
right? Because
yes.
it is anxiety-producing for any of us.
Right.
And individuals, autistic adults, autistic youth, you know, there is a high incidence of anxiety among individuals with autism as well. And that can kind of spark maybe an unusual response, right? For any of us, we might act a little awkward when we encounter a police officer who's pulled us over and we're wondering what we've done wrong. So, but for individuals with autism, the blue envelope kind of guides them through, you know, wait to be directed as to what you should do, follow the directions, place your hands on the wheel, things so that, you know, their behaviors are predictable and are what would be typically expected by a law enforcement personnel.
So this was endorsed by the Connecticut Police Chiefs Association.
Yes.
They're the ones that actually started this.
Correct.
And we'll talk in a little bit about how this has gone national, really.
Yeah.
So what, on the police officer side, what tools are they given and how they're going to interact with this person?
Yeah. So when we started talking about this as a group in the Autism Center, one of the things, as I mentioned, that we talked about was the opportunity to practice. And mm-hmm. so we thought, well, wouldn't it be great if we could create a scenario where in a controlled environment, folks had the opportunity to practice so that if in which case they are stopped on the street, they've already gone through the motions. They've already practiced in a safe environment where they feel comfortable. They've met the police officers. And so at one point, it was probably close to 2 years ago now, I reached out to our then chief of police at Southern Connecticut State University, Chief Joe Dooley, who is now retired and moved on to other things.
Yeah.
Still doing great work, still working in this initiative.
Because he believes in it,
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, as a law enforcement officer, it takes that to get that community to come together and to embrace something like this blue envelope,
Absolutely. I'm so grateful to our Southern PD for having really kind of linked arms with us and, you know, collaborated to make a training video. The training video, to answer your question, is not just for individuals who are autistic drivers, but also for the law enforcement personnel who engage in these traffic stops, these traffic stop practice events, but also traffic stops on the road every day.
Where can people find that video?
You can find it on our the Autism Center website. And so I will make sure I have the website correct for you before we part ways.
So what kind of training do the officers receive?
Yeah, so as folks sign up and we participate and, you know, collaborate with police departments now from several areas of the state, mm-hmm. and we're hoping to gain, you know, some other collaborators from other police departments, the police officers will watch the training video that we have published, but we'll also do a pre-meet wherein we'll talk to them about what they might reasonably expect, what they could see when they engage with an individual with autism on the road or elsewhere in the community. So what are some of the typical behaviors that you might see among this population and how they can best respond to that in a supportive manner?
So what are some of the predictive behaviors?
Yeah, so autism is a social communication disorder. So you may see that people don't make eye contact. Eye contact is sometimes difficult for some individuals with autism. They may not respond immediately when asked a question or when directed to do something, and that may be related to sort of a delayed processing, auditory processing.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell me to do things, it takes me a little while to sort of process what you've said to me and then respond. For some individuals, like my son, for example, it could take up to 30 seconds. 30 seconds is a long time. If we were to sit here, Ann, for 30 seconds,
oh, yeah.
be a lot of
awkward.
Dead air.
Yeah, right.
So sometimes what ends up happening is in an effort to be helpful, we, all of us, right, will try to rephrase a question. And that restarts the processing clock for people. Oh. And so we've actually, in an attempt to be helpful, we've actually kind of delayed that response a little bit further. So there may be a delay in response. There may be some lack of eye contact. There may be some repetitive behaviors or self-stimulate. You know, people sometimes engage in rocking behavior or hand flapping. Those are very sort of stereotypical behaviors among the autistic population, but if people are feeling anxious, they may just begin to engage in some of those behaviors that are might be, you know, misperceived or misunderstood by
right.
Folks.
I think we all need to better understand that. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Carrie Sasu, who is really, you know, doing some great things down at Southern.
Thank you.
We just talked about this video that people can watch that you've put together, and they can go to your website, southernct.edu/ASD-center. If you just go onto the Southern website, it's pretty easy to find, but that's great that you did a video so that people can see it and people can experience it. So, Carrie, I've got a tough question. It's kind of my job to ask that. Some people would say, and some people might be asking right now, should these folks even be able to get a driver's license? Should folks with autism be driving on our roads?
Oh, yeah. And I will say, absolutely. There's no reason why not. You know, I think, and there are a lot of people we probably all encounter on the road that I think probably shouldn't be driving.
Every day.
And I would be more than willing to bet that those are not autistic adults. So one thing we need to acknowledge about individuals with autism is that they are generally, once they have gotten the rules in, they are generally very good about following the rules. They like predictability. They generally like a schedule. They may follow the same path to work every single day when they drive. Rerouting might throw someone off, but they're generally very good about being rule followers. And if there's a speed limit, we're probably going to drive the speed limit.
Right.
we're going to abide by the stop signs. But everyone, you know, makes mistakes. So there might be a reason to have to be pulled over by, you know, a police officer. Could have a taillight out.
Right.
Could be
anything. Knows? Right, right.
But absolutely, you know, individuals with autism, highly capable individuals who really need to be, especially in our state, to be able to get to and from work.
Right. And there's so many more jobs, I find, and feel that in workplaces, that's where I've seen a change, where people are embracing the fact of the abilities of these folks and giving them jobs. So it's giving them that bit of independence too,
absolutely,
right? So they can get to and from
absolutely
jobs and start making an income and be self-sufficient that way.
Absolutely. We certainly want within our society for individuals to be contributing citizens, right? And the autistic population has so much to contribute, just like anyone else, right?
Right.
One of the statistics that's really staggering is that among individuals with disabilities, although I like to think about it as differently abled,
right, right.
Autistic individuals have the lowest employment rate, even for those who have multiple degrees. It really is quite staggering when you look at the numbers, and they are woefully underemployed. So many folks who might have, as I said, two master's degrees, right, are working menial jobs or unemployed. The unemployment rates among autistic adults are really staggering. And that really is because think about what it takes to maintain a job. It is that so those soft skills, those social communication skills,
right,
and those are the, that's where the challenge lies for these folks.
Wow. So people, if you're listening to this program, you need to keep that in mind, because loyal individuals, I think, as you just said, Carrie, they're rule followers.
Generally speaking.
You're going to get that dependency. So let's talk a little bit about your event that's coming up on March 18th.
Absolutely.
So you're doing, it's called Traffic Stop Practice, and it's for people with autism. And there are a limited number of slots for people to sign up for
Correct.
This. So what is this going to look like? It's going to be at the Tunxus College
Correct.
In Farmington. Again, March 18th from 8 to noon. So what's going to happen on this day?
Yeah, so on this day, we have police officers from several police departments. Mm-hmm. I'll let you read those
okay.
in. also, our Southern PD folks will be there to represent and to help facilitate this event. What generally happens is prior to and entering their vehicles and practicing the traffic stop, we have participants come into a room. We show them the video, which they've already been sent in advance of the event, mm-hmm. but for a second time. We talk to them about what is going to happen so that they can know the steps of what is going to happen once they leave that room. It also is an opportunity for the police officers who are there, who will be conducting the traffic stop, to engage with the drivers prior to, mm-hmm. and perhaps, you know, as I said, sort of quell some of the anxieties that some of the drivers are having prior to this, because the lights will go on, the siren might go on, when they are in the parking lot. So then within the park, once they've exited that room, once we've had viewing of the video, we've talked about what's going to happen, we then exit into the parking lot. People enter their individual vehicles, and then the police officers will direct them as to what to do, what they need to, where they need to stop. The lights and sirens will go on. To law enforcement professionals will approach each vehicle and ask them to go through practicing. If they would like to use the blue envelope, they certainly are invited to do so. There's no obligation to do so if they don't wish to. It's a tool that they can employ should they choose.
Right.
And then they are, then they're free to go. But now they have this experience under their belt, and hopefully it won't be as anxiety producing if they are stopped on the road.
Let's hope not. But I just can't imagine, you know, signing up to get pulled over.
You don't get a ticket.
You don't get a ticket. Okay. So we should mention, because a lot of police departments are taking part. So the folks that are going to be there, you've got the Southern Police Department, Farmington PD, West Hartford, Avon, and Simsbury. And again, this is happening on March 18th from 8 to noon. And where can people go to sign up for this? I think there's a QR code on your website.
There is a QR code. There's also an email address. I believe it is asdcenter@southernct.edu. Again, if you go to the Southern website and just put in the search bar this event, you should be able to find it easily.
So is this going to be one of many, or what's your plan?
This is we've already done several stops, a couple on our Southern campus, and then in the late fall, we did one down in the southeast corner with Groton and Stonington PD, which went extremely well, except for the monsoon we were having that day.
Well, weather can be a factor.
Added challenge, but it was worth it. Absolutely. So we're hoping that this will continue to proliferate and happen throughout the state, so that folks throughout our state have opportunities to engage with their local PD.
So other folks have tapped into the Blue Envelope program, and you've gone with some of the folks. Again, this is the Police Chiefs Association, Connecticut Police Chiefs Association, who started this initiative. Why are other states interested? What kind of questions are they asking you?
Yeah, great. So, yeah, the Department of Motor Vehicles and the Connecticut Chiefs of Police Association, really, they initiated that blue envelope in our state. We did, Chief Dooley and Lieutenant Anderson from Southern PD and I traveled to the International Association of Chiefs of Police conference over the summer of 22. And it was wonderful to see law enforcement really interested and engaged. And there are, we did learn that there are sort of similar initiatives happening, not the blue envelope per se, but mm-hmm. similar traffic stop practice events happening elsewhere. So it's wonderful to know that folks are truly invested in kind of bridging these two communities.
So what is your advice for people who might have a driving age son or daughter, grandson, whatever it might be, that might be on the spectrum and mm-hmm. thinking about, would you encourage them to look into them getting their license?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's absolutely no reason why an individual with autism shouldn't or couldn't get their license if they are, able to read and sit for the test and pass their licensure exam.
They right? go through the absolutely. Rigors that everybody else does. Absolutely. And if you don't pass, you don't pass.
That's right. And we all know several people,
yes,
right, who
yes.
probably took a couple of times.
You're right.
Or more. Yeah, so there's no reason. I think just with support and guidance and practice, like the rest of us, you know, folks can be very successful drivers. So it's just a really nice opportunity to also be supported by police, so that there isn't that fear or worry should one be stopped.
And do you suggest that caregivers or parents accompany these folks to this event?
Absolutely. We welcome folks. And in fact, that has been one of the most rewarding aspects of conducting these traffic stops, as folks reflecting how helpful it was for their loved one to engage in this activity, or, you know, wishing that it had happened 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. In some cases, we've had, you know, adults come with a sibling or a parent, and folks are really grateful, incredibly grateful for the opportunity to engage in this way.
You've even seen emotion.
Absolutely. Lots of it. And it makes it, I say all the time, this is a do-good, feel-good event. So people are gaining skills, both on the law enforcement side and within the autistic community. And you know, relationships are built. So it's great.
So, I mean, why do you think it's so emotional?
You know, I think a lot of times, as I'll speak as a parent, mm-hmm. Of an individual with autism, a lot of times we see that despite the fact that our loved ones are really capable and can do a lot, there is a misunderstanding or a misperception of their communication styles, their the ways that they engage with others. And it's not always, the world isn't always a welcoming place.
Yeah.
So when we are creating opportunities for folks to be welcomed and build these bridges and have positive experiences, it's always met with gratitude.
So how many folks will you be able to sign up for this event? Again, it's coming up on March 18th from 8 to noon at Tunxus Community College in Farmington. Go to the Southern Connecticut State University website and just do a search for this particular event. Great. But you've got just a number of slots available.
Correct. We are limiting it to 30 participants, but we will certainly, if there is a need to accommodate more, we will recruit other PDs to engage with us and hopefully have additional traffic stop participants.
So will there be more after this?
We don't have anything yet set up, but we are in the process of identifying additional police departments to engage in collaborating.
Wow. Well, hats off to you, because I know this is kind of your passion, and it's kind of your side gig. You're already very busy with three kids and working at Southern Connecticut State University. So what is your final message for our listeners this morning about how we can all, you know, maybe be better when it comes to, you know, I even struggle, I got to be honest, in doing this interview with my terminology.
Yeah.
You know, as someone who's supposed to be presenting the topic, am I saying the right things? Am I asking the right questions? Am I identifying these individuals correctly? Because it changes. And
it does.
So what do you say to people?
And so let me just say, I think you did wonderfully.
I did okay?
You did
right.
Wonderfully.
Well,
thank you.
Okay, thanks. Good.
I also want to say that it's a moving target, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think for all of us, if we just communicate respect and ask people how they wish to be identified. So, you know, for me, one of the things that I have reflected on recently is when I was trained, we always used something called person first language, always identify an individual with a disability, so an individual with autism. But what I've heard from the autistic community among those adults who are advocates and self-advocates, many of them will say, no, I prefer to be identified as an autistic adult. I wear this as it is wholly who I am, and it's almost like, you know, a badge of its identity, right? It
right.
is how
it's,
I
it's
identify.
It's freeing. It's got to be freeing.
Yeah.
And it also helps the person on the other end of that conversation know how to better, you know, deal and communicate.
Right. I think some of it is just about asking, right? Like, mm-hmm. help me to understand. I think whenever I'm approached personally, like, help me, if someone were to say, help me understand who you are, what a wonderful question to ask someone. Like, how do you want to be identified? Who, you know, who are you? It just communicates respect and appreciation for the diversity of human experience. So
that's right. And we're making people more functional and more welcome in today's society. So having that liberation of getting that driver's license. You know, imagine the freedom that gives these individuals so that they can go to work, so that they can live their life. It's just one more thing that they can do.
Absolutely.
And so I just, again, I applaud the effort and encourage people to go to the Southern Connecticut State University website if you want more information, and keep updated. Watch the video and see what one's next if you can't make the one in March, right?
Perfect, yes.
Okay. Well, Carrie Sasu, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure speaking with you, and I appreciate your passion and your openness in talking about your situation and what you're doing, along with all these other folks from DMV and the Connecticut Police Chiefs Association to make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
It was a pleasure. And of course, we couldn't do this without you. We want to thank you for tuning in to this edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.